Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, October 3rd. Pfluger, Trump will fight for Permian Basin. U.S. Congressman August Pfluger said former President Donald J. Trump's visit to Midland, Odessa for a fundraising lunch was a success Wednesday, with Pfluger saying Trump will fight for every single person in the Permian Basin and the country. Pfluger and his wife Camille greeted the former president at the Midland International Air and Spaceport on the tarmac and then joined the convoy to the Midland Country Club for the fundraiser. Pfluger said both he and Trump were touched by the thousands of people lining the roads with flags in a show of support for Trump. "What an honor for Camille and I to be the first to greet him to the Permian Basin, and he felt right at home and was thrilled to be here," Pfluger said via phone following the event. "He felt right at home and thrilled to be here, and the first thing he talked about was energy dominance. And he knows the and spoke multiple times about drill baby drill in the most important and prolific area for production." He said the crowd at the lunch was a good one and he was proud the fundraiser took in more than the Houston fundraiser, which was also on Wednesday. "President Trump was excited to be in Texas and in Midland and Odessa and said thank you," Pfluger said of the energy sector. "His understanding of what we do here is amazing. He knows how hard it has been the last 3 or 4 years under the Biden-Harris administration," Pfluger said as they rode to the private event and saw all the people that he told Trump, "The people love you." He said the former president wondered if they should have done a public event, but Pfluger said he assured him, "The people of Midland, Odessa know he needs fundraisers to go to the places where people don't line the streets to spread his message." Pfluger said Trump touched on just about every issue during the event. He talked about the lack of border security under Harris and issues around the world, Pfluger said, but we saw a side of Trump we don't usually see. He was self-deprecating and was very engaged, and he was just a guy you want to sit and talk to. Pfluger was particularly touched by Trump talking about his time in office and going into Iraq when he was president. "I was fighting in Iraq at that time," Pfluger, a former Air Force pilot, said. He talked about how he talked to military leaders and got an assessment of what it would take to defeat ISIS. They told him they already knew about Obama, who wouldn't listen. "President Trump used that story to say we know what the problems are and we are going to go back to solving them." President Trump also detailed how proud he was of his vice presidential running mate J.D. Vance and his performance during a Tuesday night debate. Trump told the group he had been questioned about why he picked Vance as a running mate. He said now the country knows why, and it is because he is sharp, articulate, and concise. Trump said he is very proud of Vance. Pfluger said it was a great crowd of true pioneers in the industry who want to see the country succeed. "They dug deep, and I'm proud of this area," Pfluger said. "It strikes me when I think of the Permian Basin for 70, 80, 90 years, and every single time we go through a turndown or a tough time or an oil embargo, whatever it is, we always get back up. And guess what? That is the same for President Trump. He always gets back up and fights. He will fight for the Permian Basin and will stand up for the whole country. I look forward to his inauguration in January." Hopple at Holy Cross. Bryce Hopple, Midland's Olympic athlete, will speak to Holy Cross Catholic High School students and staff at 2:39 p.m. October 3rd at the Holy Cross Gymnasium, 4014 Todd Drive, Midland. The largest carbon capture project in the U.S. could be in West Texas. Do residents want it? West Texans will have their say this week regarding a proposed carbon dioxide injection site when the Environmental Protection Agency holds a series of public meetings in Ector County. The proposed project, which has been under review for the last 2 years, would be the largest of its kind in the United States. Occidental Petroleum Corporation, or Oxy, an oil and gas company based in Houston, wants federal approval to capture and store an estimated 722,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide in three injection wells 4,400 feet underground. We know that achieving global net zero by 2050 requires technological solutions that can quickly reduce emissions on a large scale. William Fitzgerald, a spokesperson for Oxy, said in a statement, Oxy has been safely and securely storing CO2 underground for more than 50 years. Known as Stratus, the facility would be located 20 miles southwest of Odessa. Oxy previously broke ground last year. Public testimony began Wednesday with an information session at 7 p.m. and ends October 7th. The agency can take up to 90 days to issue a final decision, including changes to the proposal. If approved, Oxy would receive what's known as a Class 6 permit, the first of their kind in Texas and the surrounding region that includes New Mexico, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, and 66 tribal nations. Certain sectors of the energy industry have embraced carbon capture and storage to propel the nation toward its climate goals. For its part, the federal government has put up about $12 billion for eligible projects under the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. Climate advocates argue that the evidence about the advantages of decarbonization is insufficient and that falls short of offsetting the greenhouse gases emitted by removing them from the atmosphere. Companies are pursuing projects anyway. Multiple plans to capture and store carbon dioxide are underway in Texas, including a natural gas power plant in Baytown, owned by Calpine Texas, CCUS Holdings, which was eligible for up to $270 million in federal dollars. A second San Antonio-based gas company, Howard Energy Partners, was awarded $3 million in federal money to evaluate the technical and economic feasibility of transporting 250 million tons of carbon dioxide from the Gulf Coast. Another project in Southeast Texas, owned in part by Chevron, spans almost 100,000 acres. None, however, are close to the amount of carbon dioxide Oxy hopes to capture, inject, and store underground. Oxy is one of the top oil and gas producers in the Permian Basin, with roughly 2.8 million acres between Texas and New Mexico, and the biggest direct air capture facility in its portfolio. The company has become a household name in the Texas oil and gas industry. The proposed injection sites will create 120 jobs, Oxy said in a statement. Oxy said that the Stratus project will provide more jobs, workforce training programs, educational opportunities, and economic development in the region, but did not provide specifics. Earlier reports said the site will cost about $1 billion to construct. While it is unclear whether this project qualified for federal incentives, 1PointFive, the company's subsidiary dedicated to carbon capture, in September received $500 million for an air capture plant in South Texas. Carbon dioxide is a byproduct of oil and gas production. When a fossil fuel company burns coal, crude oil, or natural gas, it emits carbon dioxide. The greenhouse gas traps heat and prevents the atmosphere from cooling. Oxygen tends to capture and store carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and put it underground. Federal regulators determined that the energy firm met every requirement under the Safe Drinking Water Act and accounted for the protection of groundwater. Their review also concluded that the risk of sedimenticity due to the injections was minimal. And if necessary, the permit also puts the requirement in place for the event in the event of potential groundwater contamination and or seismic activity, including shutting down injection operations, an agency spokesperson said. Oxy will capture carbon dioxide from the atmosphere through direct air capture, or DAC. The technology separates the gas from other particles in the air and then raises the temperature to incinerate them, leaving only the carbon dioxide. The equipment compresses the remaining gas by raising the pressure until it is the consistency of a brine that is transported and stored permanently in pockets of rock underground. According to the proposal, Oxy will monitor the pressure and temperature of the proposed sites on the surface of the well and downhole. Temperature and pressure gauges will be measuring every second on the surface and every 10 seconds in the well, providing a reading every 10 minutes. A change in pressure could indicate a problem. The proposal stated the operators would monitor corrosion in the well 4 times a year or every 3 months. Similarly, the groundwater will be monitored every 3 months unless the regulators ask for additional testing. After 3 years, the groundwater monitoring will occur once annually. The company must alert the EPA 30 days before most tests if there are any changes. It must also alert them of any malfunctions within 24 hours. The oil and gas industry introduced carbon capture and sequestration to remediate excess greenhouse gas emissions from its operations since the 1970s. These emissions harm human health and deteriorate the atmosphere, and scientists agree they spur climate change. Industry leaders say it will help the country meet its climate goals and cool global temperatures. The benefit of carbon capture and storage have been fiercely debated for as long as the technology has existed. Climate advocates and scientists are very skeptical. They say no project has worked fast enough to offset the greenhouse gas emissions from major emitters. A handful of proposals in Louisiana were subject to backlash from the community, which expressed concerns over contamination. Commission Shift, a Texas-based watchdog group, said carbon capture and storage threatened groundwater sources. In a statement, the organization said the EPA should refrain from approving the project until the state resolves other lingering issues with saltwater injections, another underground disposal technique contributing to earthquakes in West Texas. Outside of the ineffectiveness and inefficiency of carbon capture as a climate mitigation solution, the injection and sequestration of carbon dioxide is dangerous to the land, water communities, and ecosystems nearby, Paige Powell, senior policy manager for Commission Shift, said in a statement on Friday. Ramanan Krishnamurti, senior vice president of energy at the University of Houston, said neither the public nor the industry should consider carbon capture a permanent solution. He said that residents should either pay particular attention to the precautions that Oxy and the EPA would take in case of a leak or contamination. We need not build up our hopes that this is the be-all, end-all solution, but the solution that has a time and place, said Krishnamurti, an advocate of carbon capture and sequestration technology. Let's use it as appropriate, but with very clear eyes that we understand that what the hazards are, what the risks are, and how do we make sure that we lessen the risk to the maximum extent possible and yet be able to do it reasonably. This article originally appeared in the Texas Tribune. Obituaries: Mike Devlin, Carlos Vanderberg. Mike Vanderberg, 55, of Odessa, passed on September 23rd in Jal, New Mexico. His last ride and celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, October 12th. The last ride will start at Big Daddy Zane's, kickstands up at 3:30 p.m., ride to Corky's for his celebration of life. Kareeth Wanell Stubblefield. Kareeth Wanell Stubblefield, 72, died Thursday, September 26th in Pecos. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Yared Herrera Madrid. Yared Herrera Madrid, 48, died Monday, September 30th in Lubbock. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Virginia Gonzalez Fuentes. No services have been scheduled. Virginia Gonzalez Fuentes, 67, of Odessa, died Monday, September 30th in Odessa. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Manuel Dimas Fierro Sr., 80, of Odessa, died Friday, September 27th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. October 3rd at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church, Ector County Cemetery, Odessa Garden 2. Father Lazaro officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Howard Hugh Crockett, 73, of Odessa, died Sunday, September 29th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. October 3rd at American Heritage Funeral Home. Burial immediately following in American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements by American Heritage Funeral Home. Emily Alyssa Anzures, 18, of Odessa, died Sunday, September 29th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, October 4th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Mike Bartlett officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Larry Lynn Davis. Larry Lynn Davis, a devout servant of the Lord, a loving husband, father, son, and grandfather, went home to be with his Savior on September 29th. Visitation was held at Sunset Memorial Garden on October 1st from 5 to 8 p.m. and a memorial service was held on Wednesday, October 2nd at 10 a.m. in the chapel at Sunset with Brother Ivy Shelton officiating. Center for Big Bend Studies annual conference set for November 8th and 9th. The Center for Big Bend Studies at Sul Ross State University will hold its 30th annual conference November 8th and 9th at the Vic and Mary Jane Morgan University Center on the Alpine campus. This year's keynote speaker is Dr. Severin Fowles, a distinguished archaeologist and associate professor of anthropology at Barnard College. Dr. Fowles will present his innovative research on indigenous cultures in New Mexico and Colorado and deliver his address titled The Athapascan Image, Seven Centuries of Innovation in the American Southwest, highlighting his insights into Southern Athapascan image production and cultural traditions from the American Southwest. His focus is specifically centered on interpreting rock art to significantly define our understanding of the Athapascan tradition as a regional phenomenon. His talk emphasizes the North Rio Grande Valley, while also aiming to identify broader patterns across the Pueblo region and Southern Plains. Dr. Faust will speak at the Saturday night banquet, Emmett and Miriam McCoy Building, at the Museum of the Big Bend. The cost to attend the conference is $55 for members, $60 for non-members, and free for lifetime members and SRSU student, staff, and faculty. The cost of the banquet and keynote address is $50 for members, students, staff, and faculty, and $55 for the general public. More information can be found. Email cbbs@soulross.edu or call 432-837-8179 for more information. Grand Companions hosting adoption events. Grand Companions has scheduled pet adoption events this week in Midland and Odessa. On Thursday, October 3rd, Grand Companions will be hosting Hike with a Homeless Pet from 9 to 10 a.m. at Sibley Nature Center, 1307 East Wadley Avenue, Midland. Enjoy a walk through Sibley's beautiful nature trails while giving adoptable animals an opportunity to stretch their legs. This is a wonderful opportunity to meet people, explore nature, and help a homeless pet. From 9:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, October 5th, Grand Companions will be at Christ Church Anglican, 5501 North Midkiff Road, Midland, for the Festival of St. Francis. Come bring the whole family for a day of fun and giving back to our community. Highlights include the blessing of pets and people, face painting, pony rides, a petting zoo, an art show, live music, delicious food, and shopping. Come up for an afternoon filled with excitement, fellowship, and community spirit. Grand Companions will be at Aldridge Gardens, 3300 North Fairgrounds Road, Midland, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, October 5th. Come visit some adoptable pets at this month's market at the gardens. Aldridge has welcomed over 25 vendors, including Grand Companions, representing small business owners in the Permian Basin into their breezeway for a full day of shopping, food, fun, and friends. On Sunday, October 6th, Grand Companions will host an adoption event from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Petco, 6209 East Highway 191 Frontage Road in Odessa. Add a furry friend to your family or just come out to pet some cute pups. For 35 years, Grand Companions has been a beacon of hope for homeless pets across West Texas. Their mission is to save, shelter, and honor pets as they find their way to loving homes, with locations in both Fort Davis and Midland. Grand Companions has helped countless adopters find the perfect pet and is proud to be a resource in the communities they serve. Woman accused of resuming relationship with underage boy. An Odessa woman who was arrested in February after she admitted to having sex with a 13-year-old is accused of resuming sexual relationships with the boy and is back in the Ector County Jail. According to an Odessa Police Department report, the boy's father contacted the department in May after noticing texts between his now 14-year-old and Alyssa Baeza, leading him to believe they were having sex again. The father told officers he had sent his son out of town. When the boy came back into town last month, a forensic interview was scheduled and the boy's phone was searched, the report stated. According to the report, investigators found four videos and other items hidden on the phone, and one of the videos, shot September 19th, showed Baeza engaging in sexual activity with the boy. Baeza was arrested on suspicion of sexual assault of a child and tampering with an electronic monitoring device Friday. Baeza was originally arrested after OPD received an anonymous call from someone who said Baeza was in a romantic relationship with the boy. After being read her Miranda rights, Baeza acknowledged she was in a relationship with the boy and they'd had sex twice, an OPD report stated. Originally, Baeza said she thought the boy was 18, but then admitted she knew he was 13, the report stated. The boy told a forensic interviewer at Harmony Home Children's Advocacy Center they'd had sex. The report stated, at that time, Baeza was arrested on suspicion of aggravated sexual assault of a child. She was released from the jail in April after posting a $50,000 surety bond. Prosecutors sought to have Baeza's bond revoked in July, alleging she'd been in contact with the boy and had removed her GPS monitor. When she didn't show up for the hearing, a warrant for her arrest was issued. She is now being held without bond in the first case. Her bond in the new case is set for $40,000. Habitual offender sentenced to 30 years in drug case. An Odessa man with multiple felony convictions was sentenced to 30 years in prison Wednesday after an Ector County jury convicted him of possession of 1 to 4 grams of methamphetamine. Rene Luna Sines, Jr., 47, was indicted in April 2019 and was tried before Judge Lori Ruiz Crutcher of the 244th District Court by Assistant District Attorneys Henry Eccles and Kevin Schultz. He was represented by Felix Nebo. Save some dough with EMS Lifeline. A trip to the hospital via EMS for Odessans could cost as much as $900, but the city of Odessa has been offering a solution for quite a few years, and open enrollment is right around the corner. Odessa Fire Rescue Assistant Chief Daniel Chavez said residents can avoid the stress of high ambulance bills by signing up for EMS Lifeline. Subscribers can simply add $7 to their monthly water bill or $69 to their January water bill to make a one-time payment of $69 using cash, check, a money order, or credit card. While EMS Lifeline is especially beneficial to the chronically ill or elderly patients who frequently end up taking an ambulance to Medical Center Hospital or Odessa Regional Medical Center, Chavez said others can benefit too. The fee covers the resident and their spouse, unmarried children under 26 who live with the resident, or anybody else who lives with a resident who has been declared a dependent on their income taxes. Let's say you're a 76-year-old grandma and you have custody of your grandchildren. It covers them too, Chavez said. It benefits more than one person because we don't charge per person, it's per household. Most insurance doesn't fully cover ambulance runs, Chavez said. We all know that an ambulance can be costly and it just is getting higher and higher. So this program is good. I actually buy it for my parents every year as a gift, Chavez said. It's a very good program and an opportunity for our citizens, especially our elderly. A lot of them are on fixed incomes, and it can be just very stressful, and I would hate for someone to not call 911 just because they're so worried about the finances. He agreed having a subscription might also cut down on someone risking a crash by speeding to the hospital, he said. OFR Chiefs Charlie Smith and Steve Pollack came up with the idea for an ambulance subscription in the late 90s, Chavez said. Roughly 2,000 residents are currently signed up for the service, he said. We use those funds for firefighter personal protection equipment and EMS supplies, so it goes to a good cause, Chavez said. Basically reinvest it back into our service. Chavez explained how the system works. When you first subscribe, your name is in our system and you're flagged essentially. So whenever it goes to our billing department, they'll see that your name is flagged and they will see you're a subscriber holder and you get waived with that ambulance bill, he said. There is no limit to the number of ambulance rides a particular person or household can take, Chavez said. Open enrollment for EMS Lifeline is October through December, although people can sign up anytime, he said. Interested in signing up for EMS Lifeline? Call 432-257-0502 or visit www.odessa-tx.gov.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, October 2nd, 2024. Cancer. Genetic testing can be unsettling, but empowering. Genetic testing can be unsettling, but I encourage you to ask for the support you need from friends, family, and your healthcare provider. Understanding the results received after genetic testing gives you the power to take your life's health into your own hands. Not knowing what to expect is the hard part. But once you understand your risk of developing cancer, you can prioritize your screenings and knowledge. I was in my early 20s when a provider asked if I'd like to get genetically tested due to my mother's early breast cancer diagnosis at age 39. I didn't know what this looked like, if I could handle what the results would say, and if I was ready. At that time, I didn't feel ready to know. I was proactive in my health and was able to receive screening mammograms at a younger age due to my mother's early diagnosis. 4 years later, I found the support I needed through coworkers, providers, and family. I educated myself on what genetic testing is, what the results mean, and how to use that information to take action on my cancer risk. My results indicated I was positive for the CHEK2 mutation that increases my risk for developing breast and colon cancer. My results didn't give me a cancer diagnosis. They set me up to prepare for a healthy life, educate myself, take action, such as earlier screenings, and advocate for myself and others. Genetic testing is to empower your health journey rather than scare you. As a, quote, previvor, end quote, someone who has a higher predisposition or risk of developing hereditary cancers like breast, ovarian, colon, prostate, and pancreatic cancer, I encourage everyone to understand their genetic makeup and have a conversation with their provider on what the next steps look like for you and your cancer risk. Everyone is made up differently, and everyone has their own cancer risk. It's important to understand that even with an increased risk of cancer, it does not mean you will develop cancer. It's meant to keep you proactive about your health, going to cancer screenings, and being your best advocate for changes in your body that are not normal. If you do develop cancer, the best outcomes happen with early detection, screenings, and effective treatment. You may not be ready to dive into genetic testing. Still, I hope to motivate you to reach out to someone who can support you in discussing your cancer risk and what proactive measures are best for you. Start by gathering information about your family history of cancer. If you don't know where to start, discuss your cancer risk with your provider or the breast center's nurse navigator and genetic counselor at 432-221-1189. As we acknowledge National Hereditary Cancer Week and National Previvor Day, be proactive and find your support system to help you understand your cancer risk. Here are ways to honor and support hereditary cancer and previvors. Spread the word and awareness of hereditary cancers. Check out FORCE, facingourrisk.org, for more information. Contact a genetic counselor to get started on your genetic testing. Honor those who have been affected by hereditary cancers. Support and empower loved ones going through genetic testing or who are previvors. Encourage others to ask about their family history of cancer and speak with a provider. Taylor Weidenfeld is the Community Health Coordinator at Midland Health. Cannabis. Report. Authorities need larger role in policy. With more Americans using ever stronger marijuana, a federal advisory panel is calling for a public health approach that's a big departure from just say no. Thursday's report proposes a health-focused strategy with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, taking a larger role in cannabis policy than ever before. Quote, we'd like the federal government to step up to provide some leadership in this area, end quote, said Dr. Stephen Tuch of the University of Southern California, who chaired the committee behind the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine report. The CDC and the National Institutes of Health sponsored the report. A CDC spokesman said Thursday that the agency would study the recommendations and that more money would be needed to implement them. An estimated 18 million Americans report using marijuana daily or near daily, more than the number who drink alcohol that often. Today, 38 states and the District of Columbia allow the medical use of marijuana, and many of those states also allow adult recreational use, with taxes and regulation of sales similar to alcohol. Florida voters will decide on recreational use in November. Marijuana remains illegal under federal law, although the government is taking steps to reclassify cannabis as a less dangerous drug while still illegal. Cannabis is getting stronger, with levels of the intoxicating compound THC rising. 25 years ago, cannabis flower contained about 5% THC. Quote, now you go into the stores, it's hard to find products that are less than 20% THC, end quote, said Beau Kilmer, co-director of the RAND Drug Policy Research Center and a report committee member. Cannabis can ease chronic pain, but evidence on other health benefits has been limited by lack of research. The risks for heavy users include car accidents and repeated bouts of vomiting that can send people to the emergency room. For teens, cannabis can get in the way of learning and increase the risk of mood and anxiety disorders. Regular use during pregnancy can raise risks for the baby. Public health, quote, took a back seat, end quote, as states passed cannabis laws, Tooch said. Quote, financial interests played a substantial role in influencing those policies, end quote. According to the report, industry lobbying has prevented attempts in Washington state to limit THC concentration and attempts in Colorado to restrict pesticides and cannabis cultivation. Aaron Smith of the National Cannabis Industry Association said states have protected public health by replacing criminal markets with regulated businesses, quote, that are required to test products for contaminants, practice truth in labeling, and most importantly, keep cannabis products out of the hands of minors, end quote. Making cannabis legal nationally would improve public health through federal regulation, Smith said. Among the report's recommendations for the CDC, develop and evaluate health campaigns about cannabis, specifically for parents, young people, pregnant women, and people 65 and older. Monitor cannabis cultivation, sales, use, and health impacts. Create best practices for state regulation, including ways to limit youth access. For Congress, close a loophole that allows intoxicating products derived from hemp to be widely sold, even in states where other cannabis products are illegal. Remove restrictions on the Office of National Drug Control Policy that prevent it from studying the effects of cannabis legalization. For states, require training and certification for cannabis retail staff. Automatically expunge or seal records for low-level cannabis-related offenses in states that have decriminalized cannabis. Adopt and enforce quality standards set by the U.S. Pharmacopoeia, an independent group that sets standards in medicines and dietary supplements. 100th birthday. Jimmy Carter celebrates with his hometown of Plains. Plains, Georgia. Longtime friends, family, and fans of Jimmy Carter milled around his hometown of Plains to celebrate his 100th birthday on Tuesday, the first time an American president has lived a full century and the latest milestone in a life that took the Depression-era farmer's son to the White House and across the world as a Nobel Peace Prize-winning humanitarian and advocate for democracy. Living the last 19 months in home hospice care, the 39th president keeps defying expectations, just as he did through a remarkable rise from his family peanut farming and warehouse business to the world stage. The Democrat served one presidential term from 1977 to 1981, and then for four decades led the Carter Center, which he and his wife Rosalynn co-founded in 1982 to, quote, wage peace, fight disease, and build hope, end quote. Quote, not everybody gets 100 years on this earth, and when somebody does, and when they use that time to do so much good for so many people, it's worth celebrating. End quote. His grandson, Jason Carter, chair of the Carter Center Governing Board, said in an interview. Quote, these last few months, 19 months, now that he's been in hospice, it's been a chance for our family to reflect. End quote, he continued. Quote, and then for the rest of the country and the world to really reflect on him. That's been a really gratifying time. End quote. James Earl Carter, Jr. was born October 1, 1924, in Plains, where he lives in the same one-story home he and Rosalynn built in the early 1960s, before his first election to the Georgia State Senate. The former First Lady, also from Plains, died last November at 96. About 25 family members filled his home Tuesday, enjoying cupcakes on the front lawn, while antique World War II planes flew over in his honor. At night, they planned to gather around the TV to watch the vice presidential debate. Chip Carter said his father's next goal is to make it to Election Day. Quote, he's plugged in, end quote, Carter said in an interview. Quote, I asked him 2 months ago if he was trying to live to be 100, and he said, no, I'm trying to live to vote for Kamala Harris, end quote. Chip Carter sat in the front row of a naturalization ceremony held annually on his father's birthday for 100 new citizens at Plains High School, which his father attended. The building is now a museum. Jill Stuckey, superintendent of the Jimmy Carter National Historic Park, recalled that a teacher once told Carter's class that one of the students would be president someday. She said Carter, quote, took it to heart, end quote. Quote, one thing I've learned is to never underestimate Jimmy Carter, because if you do, he will prove you wrong, end quote, Stuckey said. President Joe Biden, the first sitting senator to endorse Carter's 1976 campaign, praised his longtime friend for an, quote, unwavering belief in the power of human goodness, end quote. Quote, you've always been a moral force for our nation and the world and a beloved friend to Jill and me and our family, end quote, the 81-year-old president said in a tribute video recorded in front of Carter's White House portrait. Carter asked Biden to eulogize him at his state funeral when the time comes. But even on Carter's 100th birthday, Donald Trump could not pass up repeating his longstanding jab at the Georgia Democrat. Trump labeled Biden, quote, the worst president, end quote, and said Carter is, quote, the happiest man because Carter is considered a brilliant president by comparison, end quote. It was hollow praise for the one-term president who was defeated by Ronald Reagan in 1980, but went on to become a respected world figure. Georgia's Republican Governor Brian Kemp, for his part, declared Tuesday, quote, Jimmy Carter Day, end quote, to recognize his legacy as the state's 76th governor. Other birthday events have included a musical gala in Atlanta with dozens of artists, airing Tuesday evening on Georgia Public Broadcasting, that has raised more than $1.2 million for the Carter Center. Townspeople in Plains planned another concert Tuesday evening. And Habitat for Humanity volunteers are devoting this week to build 30 houses in his honor in St. Paul, Minnesota. The Carters served as ambassadors for the organization, hosted annual building projects into their 90s. Minister Barbara Green and Deacon William LeGreen of Americus came to Main Street in Plains to honor Carter, who helped build their Habitat for Humanity home in the early 2000s. LeGreen recalled how Carter gave the couple hammers to keep along with their keys. Quote, he didn't mind getting his hands dirty or anything of the kind, end quote, LeGreen said. Jimmy Carter was last seen publicly nearly a year ago, visibly diminished and silent as he used a reclining wheelchair to attend his wife's 2 funeral services. Jason Carter said the family hadn't expected to enjoy his 100th birthday after she died. The former president's hospital bed has been set up so he could see and talk to his wife of 77 years in her final days and hours. Quote, we frankly didn't think he was going to go on much longer, end quote, Jason Carter said. Quote, he's really given himself over to what he feels is God's plan. He knows he's not in charge. But in these last few months, especially, he has gotten a lot more engaged in world events, a lot more engaged in politics, a lot more just engaged emotionally with all of us, end quote. He said the centenarian president, born 4 years after women were granted the constitutional right to vote and 4 decades before black women won ballot access, is eager to cast his 2024 presidential ballot for the Democrat who would be the first woman, second black person, and first person of South Asian descent to reach the Oval Office. Quote, he, like a lot of us, was incredibly gratified by his friend Joe Biden's courageous choice to pass the torch, end quote, the younger Carter said. Quote, you know, my grandfather and the Carter Center have observed more than 100 elections in 40 other countries, right? So he knows how rare it is for somebody who's a sitting president to give up power in any context, end quote. Early voting in Georgia begins October 15th, 2 weeks into Carter's 101st year.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, September 28th, 2024. Religion. Commandment to love one's enemies viewed. Reverends Elliot and Flores cite trying experiences in efforts to obey. By Bob Campbell. Loving one's enemies can seem a tall order, as commanded in Matthew 5:43-48, Luke 6:27-28, and other places in the Bible, because it is one of the final steps towards spiritual maturity. So say the Reverends Eddie Elliott and Albert Flores, who cite trying personal experiences in obeying with Jesus Christ's call to rise above one of the most basic traits of human nature. I have turned the other cheek many a time, but I may not be as tolerant if someone is attacking my loved ones or the disadvantaged, said the Reverend Elliott, pastor of Solid Rock Fellowship out west. That's a different ballgame. We're all broken people. Not one of us is going to get through a day without sinning in some form or fashion. I can love my enemies and minister to them. It's an example of what Jesus has been doing with us all these years. Elliot said the Solid Rock Fellowship out west has self-defense classes for children starting at age 7, so they won't be afraid when confronted by bullies, but they're also taught that it's wrong to become bullies themselves. If a kid is turning the other cheek because he is scared to death, then his mama has raised a coward, he said. But if the kid has learned some self-defense skills and then decides to turn the other cheek, he has accomplished something. If a man can accomplish that aspect of his life, he is way up the spiritual ladder. Jesus is calling on us to be more like him. He said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, when they were the very ones who beat him and strung him up. The Reverend Flores, pastor of Victory Christian Fellowship, has graduated about 75 men from his program since 1990 for the rehabilitation and reintegration into society of alcohol and drug-addicted men. He has 4 men living in a bunkhouse behind his church, dining with his family, studying the Bible, and working on their behavior now. Most have come from broken homes, and we give them a home environment and keep an eye on them and the discipline, Flores said. We love them and go the second mile. Not too many people want to love those who are hard to love, but love is a powerful tool. Flores said it is human nature to be selfish and have little or no compassion for people who are homeless or addicted to alcohol or drugs. Before the Reverend Freddy Garcia gave him similar attention and help in San Antonio in 1981, the pastor said, I didn't even love God. That was my sinful nature. We need to be like the Good Samaritan who helped the man who had been beaten and robbed when nobody else bothered to help him out. When you come to Jesus, he will give you his heart. Flores said uncaring people need to exchange their hearts of stone for hearts of flesh. Guys, learn to love by your example, he said. They see you and they do the same. Love is an action word.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.